Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to be
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind for about a fascinating week in the Capitol. But first, wish I was there. Governor Evers, Attorney General Call. Republicans say they will not roll back limits on abortions that they've enacted over the last few years. Two cabinet secretary interviews. Veterans Affairs Mary Kaler, Workforce Development Caleb Frostman. Wish I was there.
I've said all along that I will be a partner and not an obstacle for counties and local governments across the state.
So today we are proud to announce the purchase of a new crime scene response vehicle. This vehicle is going to allow our crime scene response team here in Madison to respond more effectively and efficiently to crime scenes.
New York State law, we saw just a week ago, literally celebrations erupted at the thought of being able to abort a child up until the point of delivery. And unfortunately, just last session in our own state of Wisconsin, 2017 Assembly Bill 656 was introduced by nearly two-thirds of the Assembly Democratic Caucus. One of the things we'd like to work on with Governor Evers, and we hope to do during the course of the budget, is to focus on increasing resources for every single family who would like to adopt a child to be able to have the opportunity to do that.
We've seen a 7% drop in the number of dairy farms in Wisconsin, and that's the biggest we've known about. And we're now entering the fourth straight year of low milk prices.
Think about the future. Think about how transportation is changing. Think about how our demographics are changing. Think about how what we want our state to look like. And start funding that rather than throwing money into the system we have today.
Has care suffered at King?
I do not believe so. We have to address this as a state. It's a federal issue that certified nursing assistants are paid very low rates. The challenge we have is you have a person that can come in and get certified, get their completions, their licensings completed with the state tolerating less income, and then go and get paid higher in the private sector.
You know, this administration really wants to make sure that Wisconsin works for everyone. And I think that means our employers, making sure we're providing them with workers that the skills that they actually need, working for our employers, advocating that, again, that hard work results in a dignified life, and making sure that our entrepreneurs have a fertile infrastructure for their success.
This is nothing more than a political stunt. Because if you put this in the state budget, which Republicans are going to change, the majority party is going to change when Governor Evers introduces his budget, it's essentially going to be the same time. There's no emergency that needs to be declared today because you can't get the money in people's pockets today. It's the same timeline. It's the same thing. This is designed to look, make Governor Evers, it's like a gotcha thing. Right out of the gate, we're going to pass this. It's not going to take effect for at least 11 months when you can do the exact same thing in the upcoming state budget.
I think the real gotcha is what's been proposed by the governor. The real gotcha is that he starts off by saying that he wants to do a middle income tax cut, which is great. We all agree with that. But then the gotcha is, well, we're going to partially fund it by increasing taxes on our manufacturers. This is a good bill. This will promote more people to stay in the state in jobs, and it will hopefully create a better incentive for people to move here to fill those at least 87,000 open positions that we have here in the state.
We have this week in the Capitol highlighting dueling middle-class tax cuts. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about first about the Democrats' tax cut, because now it was one thing for Governor Evers to campaign on a middle-class tax cut, but now he's got to work with Democratic legislators. So as a result, let's go through what the governor and Democrats announced this week. First of all, it would start in the 2019 tax year, which means it would help people when they file a year from April.
Yep.
Second, it does improve earned income tax credit benefits. That's a big demand of Milwaukee legislators.
Increases if you have, so right now you can claim a credit against your state taxes for what you get from the EITC.
Yep.
It bumps up if you have one child, how much you can claim of a credit. And if you have two children, how much you claim that credit.
Great. Thank you. And it would cut the taxes on middle-income earners by about $441 million, excuse me. It would pay for that by saving about $235 million by limiting the manufacturers and agriculture tax break. So now you have Evers and Democrats coalescing around a plan. Mm-hmm. And the governor said of the Republican plan, which we'll get to in a minute, right now I cannot support a plan that has no plan for funding in the future. And Democrats like Chris Taylor on the Joint Finance Committee, middle-income tax relief is a big priority, so is funding public education, so is fixing our crumbling infrastructure, so is making sure health care is accessible and affordable. Before we get to the Republican plan, JR, the Democrats coalescing, your impression?
A couple of things worthy of note. When Governor was on the campaign trail last fall, he talked about capping manufacturing ag credit, period. Now, the cap would only be on the manufacturers who claim that credit, not on the farmers. That's an important distinction.
That is an important distinction.
The impression I got from people this week was that there was a kind of a acknowledgement in doing that there's something that's unpopular about this plan because you don't want to hit farmers right now with what's going on out right. in the ag community.
Right.
So the cap would be at the first $300,000 of income, and so you still get a credit if you're below that. Republicans, that's a non-starter. If you're raising a tax on one person to lower tax on somebody else, that's a problem, particularly, they say, when those people you're going to raise taxes on are the people creating jobs that help other Wisconsinites. So we have competing tax plans that are both non-starters for both sides.
Right. Okay. And now's a good time to talk about the Republicans' tax plan. Let's walk through it quickly. First of all, it would start in the 2020 tax year. So it wouldn't help people until they file in the April of 2021. Do I have that right?
Yes. Though from the joint finance hearing this week, they would change the holding tables in 2020. So you'd see it in your paycheck starting January of 2020. But yes, you'd see the full impact in that next year's filing.
Okay. There would be the tax cut with scores out at about $338 million. They would pay for that by drawing down the state budget surplus. And they would leave, as we've been mentioning, the manufacturer and agriculture tax break in place. One other thing that's important, I want to talk about it in a minute. They are moving this in a separate bill.
Mm-hmm.
And it got a 10-3 vote out of joint finance, I think, yesterday.
Yes.
And is it your understanding it's going to be debated in the assembly next week?
On Tuesday. And it also has an emergency declaration on it.
An emergency declaration.
Which is required because it's a spending bill ahead of the budget. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a technical thing, but... Look, and I asked people about this week, why this tax? What's going on? And the feedback I got was that the GOP leadership in the legislature is trying to box in Governor Evers. See the enforcement corner, like, okay, you asked for a income tax cut, a middle-class income tax cut. Well, here it is. We dare you to veto it. Now, if he vetoes it, then what do Democrats do in the legislature? Do they sustain the veto, or do they feel some pressure about that? I mean, let's be honest. The Democrats left in both houses, for the most part, are in safe seats. So they're not going to really take a hit if they stand with Governor Evers. But it's also a vote you can use against them come election time. Now, so there's that dynamic. The other dynamic is, okay, you both want a tax cut. How do you land this plane? And what I get the impression from people is that Evers made the argument of, look, you know, this is the inappropriate way to go about this whole process. They're trying to do this separate from the budget. It should be in the budget. That could be a justification for a veto, if we get to that.
Okay? Well, okay, but JR, are you saying that you think the Republicans are going to lay this tax cut on Evers' desk before he comes out with his budget, which we now know is Thursday, February 28th?
Well, the Senate hasn't told me yet when they're going to be in next week, if at all. So there is a way to get it done before the budget, which will be February 28th. So possibly, yeah. I mean, if they're going to do it, and have it on his desk before the budget address. It has to be next week because the only week they're on the floor this month. What I'm interested in is, you know, where do they find compromise? And that's an interesting thing, too, new dynamic. Republicans this week were saying, well, we've already compromised, because their argument now is that people in their caucus want a more broad-based tax relief mm-hmm. package than a middle-class income tax cut. So they've already come off of their position to here, so now Evers should come meet them here.
Okay.
Evers is saying, well, no. Your tax plan is irresponsible, fiscally irresponsible. There's no way to pay for it going forward. I'm not there. Republicans keep saying, well, okay, well, any tax cut you do, any spending you do is not paid for in the future either. So how do you justify that? And, oh, by the way, Governor Evers, your tax plan, while it's funded, the hit on manufacturers over the two-year period would be $518 million, doesn't cover the full cost of your tax cut. the two-year period. So you're also using some of that surplus money to pay for it.
That's true. That's true. Okay, before we hear from an exchange between Senator Johnson and Speaker Voss, I just want to summarize the formal response by both Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald to the Democrats' plan. Evers' plan is one flawed belief. That is the only way to reduce taxes on some is to raise taxes on others. Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Democrats want to hike taxes on Wisconsin businesses. That's a tax shift to create winners and losers. Our plan cuts taxes for families without raising them on anyone else, only creating winners. Okay, time for about 38 seconds. The exchange between Senator Johnson of Milwaukee and Speaker Voss, please.
Republicans want to use a one-time pot of money that is unreliable and doesn't guarantee that the tax relief given is sustainable. Governor Evers' plan is more than half paid for by the cap on the manufacturing tax credit.
Even a complete elimination of the manufacturing and agriculture tax credit, which a UW report says helped create over 42,000 jobs in Wisconsin, is not enough to fund this tax cut. We don't need to jeopardize the jobs that have been created when we can simply return the surplus to the taxpayers through this legislation.
You alluded now to Speaker Voss saying, I'm willing to negotiate with the governor on this. Why don't you and I play Solomon and solve this deal for him? Okay, we will limit the manufacturing credit by $200 million. We'll get half of that from there, and the other $200 million from the state surplus. What's wrong with that, Captain Solomon?
Well, Robin Voss has put a line in the sand saying that he will not raise a tax on manufacturers to pay for an income tax cut for middle-class folks now. There are people who say, well, wait a second, Republicans just a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, were saying they would lower the income tax or raise the gas tax. Well, how is it different? But that's a side point. So here's what, and I'm not making any predictions, but this is what the guesses I'm getting back from my interviews this week is that, okay, if they put on Evers' desk and he vetoes it, he'll have his in his budget. Mm-hmm. They get that budget, they rework it, and the question becomes, can Tony Evers rewrite that tax cut with his veto pen to make him happy? I will not going to predict anything about a full veto of a budget. I have never seen that. I don't know what that would be like. I don't know how you get past. I mean, the point I've heard for people is, if you veto the entire thing, then what? What do we do? Nobody has been through that to know what would happen.
Right.
But what I'm wondering is, with this whole thing, the whole budget, with that partial veto authority, it's so powerful. Can Tony Evers remake the Republican version of the budget to the point that he's happy? Or can at least make go out and say, here's a win for the people's budget, as he's put it, that he likes. If he can't, then what? What do you do? And I really don't know.
Well, okay. I, within the last 2 weeks, read a Legislative Reference Bureau summary on the governor's veto powers, but we'll save that for another day. The point is that the deal I threw out, half here, half there, not starter.
Well, because Robin Voss talked this week about you should never violate your principles, right? Their principles right now, the Republicans, is not to raise a tax on manufacturers they call job creators. So if that's their principle, and Robinson has never compromised on that, then what? His compromise, he suggested this week, so he said he would work with Evers on how to pay for this thing.
Okay.
His suggestion was to use the surplus or other GPR to pay for it.
Okay, I promise to not offer any more compromises on the tax cut. Okay, new subject. Let's take a look at the calendar, the timeline that could get us a budget by July 1. Let's just walk through this quickly, JR. Okay, we now know the governor's going to present his 2019-2021 budget on Thursday, February 28th, and that will kick off between the week of March 25th and April 1. Fiscal Bureau completes a summary on it. JFC holds hearings with cabinet secretaries, but GOP legislators must decide whether to base their budget on Mr. Evers or current spending.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
That's still an option. And again, as I've said before, when I've asked about that possibility, well, the feedbacks I've gotten is maybe on the small things, they accept Evers' position because, you know, these small issues, it's not that big a deal in terms of the spending that they have. But on the big ticket items, maybe that's where you see them go to base.
Yep.
People have a hard time seeing you starting from scratch and building your own budget. Although, look at some of the staffers that Republicans have hired, like John Nygren, the co-chair of the Finance Committee, now has
the state,
Governor Walker,
former state budget director. Excuse me.
He has Waylon has some expertise
on
how to do a budget, so he could be a big help. And so we'll see.
Okay, let's continue the calendar, the timeline. In April, joint finance is going throughout the state, holding regional hearings on the budget. You know, hundreds of people show up. They usually get 2 minutes. The Madison-based lobbyists are told, don't come here. We want to hear from the people. In May, you could see it's possible JFC votes and drafts its version of the 2019-21 budget. Then June, both houses consider it up or down. And they're supposed to put it on Governor Evers' desk by July 1, which is the start of the new 2019-2021 budget cycle. But if no budget is signed, unlike the federal government, we continue running at the current rate. Odds of a budget by July 1?
I don't know. I've asked about this numerous times in the last few weeks, and there are two camps that I kind of hear. One is the idea that, you know, Robin Voss, the Speaker of the Assembly, and Scott Fitzgerald, the Senate leader, were at odds, to put it nicely, at the 17-19 budget. Remember, at one point, Robin called some Senate Republicans terrorists, his words. They didn't get along on things, but now they have a common foe in Tony Evers. So maybe that makes it an easier process, because rather than focusing on each other, they focus on what did Evers propose versus what can we get done. Oh, and by the way, because you have Governor Evers as a Democrat in the East Wing, all these little things that they would, you know, go back and forth about, the infamous 999 motion with all these, like, special provisions, they're not going to pass with Tony Evers. Unless you have Tony Evers' buy-in, they're not going to pass. So you have less to bicker about in that regard, too. So maybe Republicans get the budget done early, because they have that, again, that common foe, less to worry about. Also, by the way, the partial veto authority, the less language you put in the budget, the less you have to give fodder for Tony Evers to rewrite the budget. So maybe that's a good thing to get it done.
Yeah.
The other thought is that they want to get a deal with Evers to ensure that they get things they want. Well, how does that negotiation go, and when you get it done? Because what's the trade-off going to be? Okay, Governor, if you promise us no vetoes on this, this, and this, we'll give you this. Okay. That opens a door to, like, that July, August, maybe.
Yeah, right.
Then the other scenario, the full veto.
Yep.
What happens
then? Veto the whole budget. Wow.
Then,
I don't know.
And the reason why I say,
stop
the what to do
presses.
Then is how do you, if you Evers tells lawmakers, this whole thing is junk, I can't accept it. Well, what are they going to do differently? You know, you might get your best bet if you're Evers by that partial veto authority, and reworking all kinds of things and see what you can do.
But maybe I'm going to sound a note of hope. They're going to negotiate a compromise on the tax cut, leaving only transportation and health care as the big ticket issues.
Oh, yeah, just transportation and health care. No big deal.
They can do it by July 1.
What about the $1.4 billion Evers wants for schools, including $600 million for special ed?
Would you take it to $900 million in 2021,
so,
which is almost close to one penny increase in the sales tax, which he's not advocating. I don't want anybody to
misinterpret that. I'm just saying that there are big issues out there. And, oh, by the way, don't forget with Medicaid, he wants the expansion. They don't.
Optimism here. Okay. Second meeting of this 34-member stakeholder task force on highway funding. Mm-hmm. I just want to walk through some of the – I have a list of the 12 different possibilities that were laid out at Monday's meeting in La Crosse, but I just want to focus on like five of them. A $10 increase in the $75 you and I pay to register our vehicle. That would instantly raise $40 million, according to the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, although Fiscal Bureau estimates scores that at 47. Okay, let's just go down all of them. If you raised the if you had a registration fee based on new vehicles, like some of our surrounding states, mm-hmm. Iowa, do, that would be an additional $49 million, but not until 2022, because you could only charge it once somebody bought a new vehicle. Okay. If we went back to indexing, again, you'd have the score, the upper, with a three-year lag, $55 million. If you eliminated the trade-in, which is a popular thing, an additional revenue of $87 million by 2022, and then let's come back to a 5-cent increase in the gas tax, which would kick in almost immediately, and it would be worth $165 million. Now, I have a list of seven or eight other revenue raises, but I want to hear you on these five.
Look at the Marquette polling on registration fees and gas tax increases. They're not very popular. So,
time out. Do you know what Craig Thompson told me? 52% no, on raising the gas tax. 42% yes, but Craig Thompson said last year's Marquette poll, same issue, 62% no. Craig said we're making progress. Sorry, so I interrupted maybe, you.
But then also, what's the proposal? Is it 5 cents? Is it 10 cents? Is it 25? You know, like...
It's 5.
So it's 5.
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you sell it as we're going to cut your income taxes so that will help offset the increase in gas tax? Maybe. The issue that I've had in talking to people is, okay, is there an appetite in the Republican caucuses for a gas tax increase? And I get the kind of, well, maybe answer. Like in the Senate, do you think of those 19 members right now, there are 17 who want to raise the gas tax? I have a hard time seeing that conservative wing, Dewey Strobel, Chris Kapinga, Steve Noss.
Dave Craig. Yeah.
And the unknown Andre Jacques, how is he going to be in that caucus? How are they going to react to that?
Okay, but that's got to be seen in light of what potential compromise did we win? Did we have any winners on the middle income tax cut?
Yeah. Okay. So there's that question that I have. In the Assembly GOP, remember, 2 years ago, they put out a plan to cut income taxes dramatically.
Eliminate
over like
the
a,
minimum markup,
over
et
cetera. I don't know how many years, and increase the gas tax, the markup would go away, all that stuff. It never went anywhere.
Yep.
Other than they proposed it. So they've done that, but they never came to a vote on that issue. They proposed as a caucus and put leadership on Rick, but never got like all these members in maybe tight districts to say
That's
yes
right.
or no.
There was never any floor vote.
So where is that? Where is that issue? And I don't know. Now, Republicans will tell you that they could grab the sales tax off of car sales or car parts or things like that. Those have been floated before.
Yeah, stop right there, because I looked up how much that would divert. If you took sales taxes paid on vehicles and auto parts and repairs, that's a potential diversion from the general fund to the transportation fund of $630 million. $630 million is the governor needs to pay for health care, K-12, UW system, et cetera.
And remember, people at home got to remember that we have two checking accounts basically in state government. We have the general fund and the transportation fund. The general fund pays for your schools, Medicaid, government operations.
Runs your prisons.
Runs prisons, state aids to local governments. So that's off of income, sales taxes, corporate taxes, sin taxes, those kinds of things.
Okay.
Transportation fund, gas tax, registration fees, federal money. What we're talking about is if you take stuff out of the general fund, like the sales tax revenue, and put it in the transportation fund, you have less money for schools, for Medicaid, for government operations, for an income tax cut. That could be problematic for Tony Evers, who wants to increase school spending quite a bit. So how does that work? I guess all these options are there, but they all have a drawback, and I don't know which one's going to work just yet.
Right. This is a great time for... I put the question to Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson with the Marquette poll that JR alluded to. How do you sell a gas tax increase? Let's please listen to his answer. How do you get to yes when the last Charles Franklin and Marquette poll said, we want better roads in Wisconsin, but the score on increasing the gas tax was 52% no, 42% in favor?
It's like a generic ballot, right? I mean, yeah. Nobody has anything to react to. I believe when Governor Evers proposes a transportation budget, we will be able to tell people this is what it would mean if there's increased revenues, for the average person, or you can do the calculation. I think it's going to be. We're not going to solve anything in the next 2 to 4 years, but I think we can get on a path for a couple dollars more a month, where we can have a budget that will stop the decline of the conditions on our state highways and start to improve them. I believe we can give the towns, villages, counties, cities more money to be addressing their needs. I believe we can increase some funding for transit and access to that. I believe we can address increasing money for elderly and disabled aides. I think we can do all of that and still be one of, if not the cheapest states in the Midwest in those two user fees that we pay.
JR, I just want a quick PS on this highway funding thing. My notes from the stakeholders meeting in La Crosse, the DOT said this: if we increase the gas tax by 5 cents and you own a passenger car that gets 29.2 miles to the gallon, or an SUV that gets 22.2 miles to the gallon and is driven 12,000 miles a year, a 5 cent increase in the gas tax will only cost you $40. So when Craig Thompson in that segment we just heard says a couple dollars more a month, that may well be where they're going to end up.
Don't forget, though, that Scott Fitzgerald has been saying for a long time, even if you raise a gas tax a lot more than 5 cents, doesn't fix the problem. There is a deep
problem.
But it's
a down payment. Okay.
So, again, that's that rub of, like, they have an issue with a tax increase, and they go, it's not going to pay for the whole problem.
Okay. We're having so much fun. Time is flying by. Okay, the governor also is going to try to close the dark store loophole in the budget now. We saw press releases from Democratic legislators saying, yay, retailers are filing and winning lawsuits seeking to tie their assessed values of open stores to the value of closed empty stores. Local governments say that trend is unfairly shifting property taxes to homes. Republicans couldn't, the Assembly acted, the Senate couldn't on a bill fixing this. The governor says it should be fair for all, and in order to, we have to close this loophole. Just quickly, your thoughts on dark stores?
Evers said that there's going to be a little bit of money in the budget for this issue, didn't explain what that would be.
Yeah.
The proposal would be a Wisconsin Manufacturers of Commerce, basically our business lobby association, is adamantly opposed to this. There is an interesting dynamic in Republican caucuses of you've got a number of folks in the GOP who want to do this because their locals are saying this is a problem, but they've got the business community saying, no, don't do this. So I'm not sure that's going to play out when push comes to shove.
Okay, next topic quickly. There is a flood of lawsuits that you and I and Wisconsin taxpayers are paying for. There was a third lawsuit filed this week by unions to attack the lame duck laws. That was unions and Democratic Senator Janet Buley. Attorney General Josh Call, citing a DOJ conflict, won't defend the lame duck laws. Private attorneys have to be hired there. Assembly Republicans budgeted $840,000 in legal fees. This ongoing fight over the legislative boundary lines they drew in 2011. And the Republicans hired the former Solicitor General to defend the lame duck laws they passed. Millions of dollars in legal fees being paid by you and I and Wisconsin taxpayers, right?
Well, overall, yes. On the lame duck lawsuits, it's like the contracts I've seen so far for the governor and for the elections commissioner, like $50,000 each. Not that that's, you know, pennies. But there's a cap on those unless there's more action needed. We're waiting to get the one for the Republican legislators to see what the former Solicitor General is being paid or could be paid for this. The question is, how long these lawsuits go on, and does that tab go higher? It'll be interesting to watch.
Okay. All right, let's go to your stock picks. Rising.
So tolling, so we didn't really talk about that.
Highway tolling, yep.
The commission, but during an appearance for the Wisconsin Counties Association, Scott Fitzgerald, who I went back and looked 2 years ago, was saying that tolling should be part of the conversation, now saying this has to be part of the answer. That there's a long-term solution with tolling that can fix things. Now, there are issues with tolling. You've got to build tolling booths. You have to pick where you can do it. The feds have to give you approval for certain. I think there's a waiver available right now. Like, there are certain states can get, so many states can get a waiver to do.
Three states can get a waiver to toll.
Yeah.
And Craig Thompson says maybe we should apply for one of them. But excuse me, this is your pick.
No, I mean, that's a good point. So it's interesting. I asked Charles Franklin with the Marquette poll about tolling. They haven't asked about it since 2013 and 14, but back then it was above 50% for people who supported the idea of tolling, low 40s, low to mid 40s for people who opposed it. So more popular than gas tax hike was in the latest Marquette polling, but it's not an immediate fix for what's going on.
Years away.
So now, how many years is the question? Can they speed it up? Is there a way to get things done quicker? Maybe. But it could be a long-term solution, and you have Republicans saying that, yes, we're okay with it because it's a user fee. And that's the point for Republicans. It's a user fee to have a tolling system that they're okay with versus a gas tax hike.
Okay, mixed.
So Brian Hagedorn,
Supreme Court candidate.
New fundraising reports out this week show that Hagedorn raised $237,000, which is more than his rival Lisa Neubauer, raised about $174,000. However, she had $715,000 in the bank, and he had $429,000. Look, the money these guys raised for the Supreme Court race, okay, that's a good chunk of change. The reality is it will be overshadowed by what outside groups spend if this race becomes a true competitive go-for-it race. Remember, we talked about the dynamic. This seat sets up whether 2020 is for control of the court.
Yes.
So the Hagedorn money is important because it sends a signal to conservative groups, hey, this guy's for real. Remember, last year's race kind of fizzled. Rebecca Dowd won by 12 points, I think, statewide. This is a good for Hagedorn to say, hey, I'm for real. Now, got a couple issues, though. Some blog posts from his law school days.
Mm-hmm. Could come back to haunt him.
Basically suggesting that open door to gay marriage, that then opens the door to bestiality. Now,
and ripping Planned Parenthood.
It is a wicked organization. Remember, Rebecca Bradley had a bunch of columns from her college paper come to light during the campaign in 2016. She survived in part because she apologized. That wasn't the person she was anymore, talking about AIDS and homosexuality, some other issues. Also, she had Republican turnout boosted because of the presidential primary that year. That helped her. Mm-hmm. Hagedorn defended his columns. He wasn't a college kid in a newspaper. He was a law student. I know it's only a few years, but it's an opening to his legal thinking. That's the concern I heard from people this week. It opens a door to me how he thinks legally, and that's a little more serious than the amusing of a college kid in newspapers.
And potential motions that he recuse himself if he's on the court. But okay, we got to move on. You got 20 seconds for falling. Excuse me.
Hey, tuition's going up for out-of-state students. How's that?
Oh, that's wonderful.
Six campuses at UW System for out-of-state undergraduates, grad students, in-state, out-of-state, both are getting hit with increased tuition. If you're an in-state undergrad, nothing to worry about.
Nice job. Before we close, though, Democratic State Chair Martha Lanning announced mm-hmm. that she will not be seeking re-election.
Yep.
That was news to me. You've been working this. You hear some potential names who might
want it. There
are
all kinds of names floating.
Any you want to...
Randy Bryce says he's interested.
I'm sorry, Randy Bryce? Iron Stosh?
Yes. Kelda Royce, former state representative, ran for governor last year. Pat Kreitlow, former state senator. David Bowen, state rep, who's vice chair under Lanning. There are a bunch of names floating, okay. All right? Here's the bottom line. Lanning did a good job fundraising, wasn't necessarily come from the role as attack dog as party chair, but built an infrastructure that helped Democrats greatly last fall. What does Tony Evers want in a state party chair? It's very important. Now, Tammy Baldwin, Mark Buchan, Gwen Moore, Ron Kind, other electeds will also have a say in this, but who does Governor Evers want? The caveat is he can't anoint somebody to be party chair. You have to be elected at the state convention in
yes.
June.
Yes.
Delegates show up and vote. So you have to have, they will probably, people tell me, pay attention to what Evers wants, but that person has checked boxes of being able to raise money, be able to build an infrastructure, build off what Martha did, appeal to the grassroots. I mean, there's a party that's diversifying quite a bit right now.
And so, there are new African-American voices, the Crowleys and the Myers and the Stubbs and the Haywoods that are going to be a part of that dialogue.
So we fascinating to watch how that plays out, but watch for what's the Evers signal for who he wants as the party chair.
Okay. Finally, next week we can look for a state assembly vote on the tax cut,
Tuesday.
Potentially also the state senate.
Been waiting and asking all week long. Are you be on the floor? Have not heard back yet.
Okay. Understand. There will also be a number of Black History events in the Capitol. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for February 8.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.